Questioning Paul Chapter 4 Part 5.
It should be noted here that Satan's crotch is said to fulfill and satisfy as a result of incapacitating corruptions, while the same sickening perversions promoted by Paul reside with Christu. This not only equates the Messiah with a pagan deity, but also with Paul's profanity. As a result, Satan's fingerprints appeared on Paul's letter when he wrote, "Speaking of the Lord."
"And he has actually spoken this to me, it is sufficient and satisfactory for you, and you should be content to possess my charis or grace, because the supernatural ability and power in weakness and perversion, sickness and corruption, is fulfilling and complete, brought to fruition. Gladly, therefore, more willingly and readily I will boast, glorifying myself in the lack of insights and inadequacy derived from such perversions and corruptions of mine, in order that it might take up residence on me the ability and power of the Christu." 2 Cor 12:9.
In other words, not only is Shaul's Christu a perverted corruption, he isn't nearly as satisfying, nor are his fulfillments as relevant, as those of the trees. And that means Paul's Christu bears no resemblance to the actual Messiah. While we have received more than we could have anticipated through this review of Paul's correspondence with the Corinthians, let's remain a little longer. It is not often we are invited to visit such insanity. And seldom is malignant malfeasance so prominently displayed as it is in these words.
"Therefore, I am pleased with and prefer, delighting in sickening perversions, in presumptuous maltreatment and outrageously damaging insults, in the necessity and inevitability of compulsion and punishment, in persecution and oppression, and the difficulty of the distressing restrictiveness regarding Christu is the reason I am sickened by my perversions, and at the same time I am empowered, competent and capable." 2 Cor 12:10.
If nothing else, we have Paul's stamp of approval on our working definition of aspenia, sickening perversions, and we now know that he is in favor of them, and worse. But this is so bad, it takes your breath away.
"Therefore, it should be self-evident, I am pleased with and prefer, delighting in, I enjoy and take pleasure in, even consider good and consent to sickening perversions, the inadequacies and infirmities caused by corruptions, and weakness born of dishonesty in presumptuous maltreatment and outrageously damaging insults which are injurious and arrogant, in the necessity and inevitability of compulsion and punishment, the advantage of obligations and unyielding pressure, in persecution and oppression, harassment and molestation, and the difficulty of the distressing restrictiveness and troublesome narrowness associated with Christu is the reason I am sickened by my perversions and made inadequate by my corruptions, and at the same time, I am empowered, competent and capable, plausible, expert, and important, mighty, powerful, and influential. 2 Cor 12:10.
That may be the single most perverted and twisted thing I've ever read. If this man is your apostle, if he is a spokesman for your God, I'd recommend replacing both. At this point I am beginning to think we are witnessing the impossible, a miracle of sorts. Paul is actually driving nails into his own coffin while burying himself. I'm surprised that he didn't list this among his achievements. Christian apologists will claim that Paul is saying what doesn't kill me makes me stronger, but that isn't permissible, not only because Paul claims to have been killed multiple times, but also because our suffering is irrelevant. The message of the Micrae is that Yahusha suffered so we wouldn't have to. Also, those who speak on behalf of God should never claim that their problems empower them, making them competent or capable, because it is Yahusha's fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, and Shavuot that accomplishes these things on behalf of his testimony, and thus his influence, not ours. So by claiming these things, Paul is saying that his sacrifices and sufferings matter, making him a more credible and capable influence in the lives of others. By doing so, he is positioning himself as the savior of his religion. No sane individual delights in or prefers any of the horrible things on Paul's list. By saying that he has come to enjoy them, he is affirming the consequence of being demon-possessed. These are the kinds of things Satan delights in. Galatians, as we will learn, perverts and corrupts Yahweh's testimony to infer the inadequacy of his Torah. Thus far in it, we have read Paul outrageously insult Yahusha's disciples, presumptuously maltreating them. Then in the manner of all hypocrites, after besmirching Yahweh's Torah, calling it enslaving, and thus unyielding in its obligations, Paul says that he is in favor of compulsion, calling the threat of punishment advantageous. And I suppose this is why he favors oppression, harassment, and molestation. And yet these problems pale in comparison to stenochoria, the difficulty of the distressing restrictiveness and troublesome narrowness associated with Christu. At its root, stenochoria wouldn't be so bad if not for its associated baggage, in that it is comprised of stenos, narrow strait, and chora, the space lying between two places. The path to God is indeed narrow and straight, and as a result, few find it. But unfortunately, Shaul uses stenochoria to speak of anguishing tribulation, coming upon the doers of evil, in Romans 2 verse 9. It is presented as a distressful tribulation, leading to persecution, in Romans 8 verse 35. Earlier in this letter, stenochoria was deployed in 2 Corinthians 6 verse 4 to convey affliction. So by concluding his statement with
the difficulty of the distressing restrictiveness and troublesome narrowness associated with Christu is the reason I am sickened by my perversions and made inadequate by my corruptions, and at the same time, I am empowered, competent and capable, plausible, expert, and important, mighty, powerful, and influential.
Shaul is associating what he perceives to be the negative effects of Yahweh's unyielding and unrelenting specificity regarding his way to redemption, the way Yahusha lived, with his rise in influence. And while nothing is truer, nothing is more devastating. If we were to distill the whole of Pauline doctrine down to one thought, it would be the negation of the narrow path Yahweh presented and Yahusha walked by replacing it with unspecified, insubstantiated, and unrestricted faith. This is what made Paul popular, and thus influential. And the more popular he became, the more plausible and credible his letters were perceived to be. But unfortunately for those who have bought into the myth that salvation comes to those who believe Jesus died for their sins, the source of that deception lied as a result of being demon-possessed and insane. Like those watching a train wreck unfold, it's hard to divert our eyes away from what Paul is writing, even though we know that souls are dying in the carnage. And speaking of a wreck, consider the Nestle-Aland's MCREYNOLDS interlinears amalgamation of Paul's next statement.
I have become unthinking, you me compelled I for O but you to become ended nothing, for I lacked of the very beyond delegates if even nothing I am.
I had come to be ignorant and irrational. You, yourselves, compelled me. For this reason, you all are obligated to me, and under me, you owe me to be commended and recommended. For indeed, I lacked nothing, never falling short of the preeminent if even I am nothing. 2 Corinthians 12 verse 11.
Paul has already revealed that he had become a covetous and lustful libertine because of the Torah. Now he says that the Corinthians have made him stupid. And let us not forget, Satan made him humble. It should be noted that Paul isn't paying Yahusha's disciples a fleeting and backhanded endorsement here by claiming to be as good or better than the preeminent apostles, because he uses hyperlin in 2 Corinthians 11 verse 5 ironically, saying I suppose I was not a whit behind the super-duper apostles. And here he is so obnoxious that he says that even if he were worthless, he'd still be better than those Yahusha, chosen trained. And in spite of being a self-admitted pervert, a murderer, insane, demon-possessed, and now ignorant and irrational, Paul is demanding a letter of accommodation, a recommendation from those he has deceived and demeaned. So since he claims that we owe him, that we are in his debt and are obliged, let's all pull out our pens and give this man who says he lacks nothing the one thing he craves: approval. Or, on second thought, Let's give him what he deserves. Condemnation. While I'm normally opposed to using English translations for any purpose other than to incriminate them, the New Living Translation does such a wonderful job of indicting Paul that I thought I'd share it with you.
You have made me act like a fool boasting like this. You ought to be writing commendations for me, for I am not at all inferior to these super apostles, even though I am nothing at all. When I was with you, I certainly gave you proof that I am an apostle. For I patiently did many signs and wonders and miracles among you. The only thing I failed to do, which I do in the other churches, was to become a financial burden to you. Please forgive me for this wrong. 2 Corinthians 12 verses 11 to 13. Some of you admit I was not a burden to you. But others still think I was sneaky and took advantage of you by trickery. But how? Did any of the men I sent to you take advantage of you? When I urged Titus to visit you and sent our other brother with him, did Titus take advantage of you? No. For we have the same spirit and walk in each other's steps, doing things the same way. Perhaps you think we're saying these things just to defend ourselves. 2 Corinthians 12 verses 16 to 19.
Previously, we witnessed a summation of one of Shaul's most chilling confessions. So before we press on, let's reconsider the testimony of the ultimate chameleon and the world's most notorious charlatan. And once again, as we approach his defense, please note that this is all about Paul trying to justify his controversial tactics and mission before a skeptical audience. In these incriminating words, we find Paul refusing to abide by even his own rules. As a chameleon, he was ever ready to change his colors to take advantage of whatever audience he was trying to beguile. And here he is admitting to this very thing, in his own pathetic style.
And I became to the Jews like Jews in order that I might make a profit by procuring an advantage over Jews, to those under Torah, like under Torah, not being himself under Torah, in order that those under Torah I might make a profit by procuring an advantage over, 1 Cor 9 verse 20, to those Torahless, like Torahless, not being Torahless of God, to the contrary, in the Torah of Christ do in order that I might make a profit by procuring an advantage over those without the Torah, 1 Cor 9 verse 21, I became to the unable and morally weak, incapacitated and inadequate in order that those impotent and sick I might make a profit by procuring an advantage over, to everyone I have become every kind of thing in order that surely by all means some I might save. 1 Corinthians 9 verses 20 to 22.
As I've mentioned before, even Machiavelli, the man who postured the admirable slogan of despots everywhere, saying in essence, the ends justify the means, wasn't this blatant? Turning to the ultimate authority on Shaul, as if he were admonishing him, Yahusha used kurdeno, the very same verb deployed here 4 times, to warn us.
For what will be accomplished and who will be helped by a man if the entire universe he might gain, winning over, taking advantage of and profiting from, but his soul he forfeits? Matthew 16 verse 26.
God's insights are stunningly appropriate, especially when we consider Shaul's elaborate justification for personal payment in 1 Corinthians 9 verses 1 to 12. If we knew where he was buried, this should be written on his tombstone. The tactic Paul is bragging about is what we might expect from an unscrupulous politician or businessman, who will say and do anything, no matter how deceptive or fraudulent, to garner an unfair advantage. But from someone claiming to speak openly and honestly on behalf of God, this is unjustifiable. Yahusha never pretended to be other than he was and is. But by admitting this, Paul has just told everyone that his words, his behavior, and his claims, such as representing the Messiah, cannot be trusted. While he was also driving nails into an already sealed coffin, Yahusha is recorded in Matthew 10 verse 8 saying,
"You have received without paying, give without being paid."
To eliminate any misunderstanding regarding the dubious tactics of this charlatan, the primary meaning of kurdeno, Translated, I might make a profit by procuring an advantage over, is related to gaining an advantage over someone in the pursuit of wealth, influence, and acclaim. To the common man of his day, Cardano spoke of desiring worldly things to such an extent that a person would cheat others while feeling no compunction against being crafty, clever, or cunning. Metaphorically, Cardano can be used to speak of winning someone over, but that option is torn asunder in the context of clandestinely and deceptively metamorphosing oneself to gain an advantage. And interestingly, the secondary meaning of Cardano is to avoid problems in the process of trying to spare oneself. But that connotation is only applicable when used as part of a hypothetical situation or an instructional parable. Even if we were to give Paul the benefit of the doubt, something he no longer deserves, and render Cardano win, Paul's statement would remain lamentable for the admission that he was always willing to operate under false pretenses. It's called fraud, and in most places, fraud is a crime. Since we have been so inundated by Paul's relentless rejection of the Torah, we may now be somewhat callous to it, but nonetheless, the true butter of troubled testimony just affirmed.
To those under Torah, in such a way to show a weak relationship under Torah, not being himself under Torah, for the purpose that those under Torah I might make a profit by procuring an advantage over?
I suspect that Shaul was deploying this dubious tactic in his defense, the one recorded in Acts 22 verse 3, when he was trying to convince a Hebrew audience that he was the perfect religious Jew. However, since the Torah provides the lone means to relationship and redemption, by the admission that he wasn't himself beholden to Yahweh's guidance, he has condemned his soul. And while Shaul earned an express ticket to Sheol with those words, we must ask, what did he mean by?
To those Torahless and thus without the Torah, in such a way to show a weak relationship with Torahless, not being Torahless of God, to the contrary and making a contrast, in the Torah of Christu.
There is no Torahless association with God, and the only Torah of the Messiah referenced was the one Paul disassociated himself from in the previous sentence. Further, to suggest that there are two different Torahs, one authored by Yahweh and the other by Yahusha, is to contradict God's testimony on the matter. So this man's language was as duplicitous and misleading as were the pretenses under which he operated. If that were not enough, Paul specifically states that he was like the Anamos, Torahless, a condition he explicitly associated with Satan in his previous 2 Thessalonians 2 verses 7 to 9 statement. That was akin to proclaiming, I, Paul, am just like the Antichrist. While true, it's bad. No matter how Isthenes, morally weak, incapacitated, inadequate, impotent, and ill, is translated, it isn't something we ought to be bragging about. This is especially true for the children of the covenant who are perfected, enriched, and empowered by God. Even his parting salvo.
To everyone I have become every kind of thing in order that surely by all means some I might save.
Provides a window on this man's grotesquely egotistical soul. Yahweh, himself, couldn't save everyone. And Yahusha didn't try. And while this says to us, some, it was for passing, everyone. For those of you who have read The Prince and are familiar with Machiavelli's infamous and immoral advice to wannabe religious and political potentates, it is likely that Shaul's statement inspired the prince's assertion that the end justifies the means. All manner of horror has been perpetrated on humankind as a result of this mantra. It serves to this day as the justification for political oppression and religious terrorism. If Paul hadn't just wallowed in delusion and hypocrisy, not to mention deceit and pride, I might have skipped his parting salvo. But after hearing him say that he would impersonate anyone to save everyone, we are compelled to question what he meant by.
But all I do by the healing messenger and beneficial message in order that joint partner of his I might become. 1 Corinthians 9 verse 23.
While you can make of this what you will, it is important to recognize there is no common ground between Shaul's message and Yahusha's. and Yahusha, explicitly condemned hypocrisy, so Shaul's approach isn't godly. Lest we forget, Yahweh has no partners. That is why Yahusha means Yahweh saves. But in this pathetic plea, we once again see Shaul pretending to be his Lord's partner, a fellow participant, and thus the co-savior. Since we have been comparing Shaul and Muhammad, detailing the similar nature of their conversion experiences and challenges with demon possession, I thought I'd share a few more interesting comparisons. Just like Muhammad, Shaul was a sexist. In his world, men would lord over women.
But, I want and propose to you to be aware that every man is of preeminent and superior status is head. The mason exists as the head, and this is superior. But with woman, man is of preeminent and superior status is the head, and then of the mason God, 1 Corinthians 11 verse 3.
They would be considered shameful, and women would be forced to cover up for fear of being abused.
But all women praying or prophesying, uncovered, the head shames her head. For one it is also the same as having been shaved. For if the woman is not covered up, let shear her but on the condition the disgraceful and shameful woman to be sheared or shaved is covered up, 1 Corinthians 11 verses 5 to 6.
Just like Muhammad, Shaul wanted women veiled and out of sight.
In you these things exist which are fitting, proper, and appropriate. Separate and judge a woman who is uncovered praying to God, 1 Corinthians 11 verse 13.
Just as in Muhammad's Quran, Shaul wanted men to lord over women. So he wrote,
"The woman to her own individual man like the Lord," Ephesians 5 verse 22.
For those who may protest, suggesting that Yahweh said something similar to Tshuwani in Bereshit/Genesis 3 verse 16, such claims are based upon errant translations. God actually said,
"And toward your husband and man your strong emotional feelings is why he will liken this to you and he will govern with you."
Also, just as Muhammad created a religion named Islam, submission, Shaul served his Lord by demanding submission.
To the contrary, just as the called out assembly is submissive to and controlled by the mason in this way, and the woman to the man in everything, Ephesians 5 verse 24.
Hypodisima is a compound of hypo, meaning under, and tasso, an assigned and orderly arrangement. It is the antithesis of free will. And it should be noted that the Malek/Angelos, spiritual messengers, errantly known as angels, or demons, based upon their allegiance, are Saba, arranged as conscripts in a command and control regimen in which they are required to fall in line and submit. It is little wonder Paul's entire Damascus Road affair smacks of falling in line and surrendering, all of which is the antithesis of free will. Shaul, on behalf of Satan, wants to completely control mankind, raping humans of their free will, so that they will suffer his fate. It is a destiny far worse than returning to bondage in the crucible of Egypt. Those who trust Yahweh, rely upon him, there is never a reason to be anxious. As children of the covenant, our job isn't to quell rebellions or to stew over the called out assemblies. And that is because the sacrosanct nature of free will precludes us from hindering the choice to rebel. Moreover, the set-apart spirit is responsible for nurturing and protecting her children, not us and not Paul. And Yahweh is responsible for us because he is our heavenly Father. And yet Shaul, in competition with God, inappropriately put himself in that role.
"I do not write this to shame you, but to warn you as my beloved children." 1 Corinthians 4 verse 14.
Yahweh encourages us to expose lies and witness to the truth. We do this by observing and reciting the Torah, and by following Yahusha's example. All we are asked to do beyond this is to clear the dirt off of the table, set Yahweh's invitation upon it, let people know that it is there, remain available to answer their questions, and then let them make up their own minds. His is a take it or leave it proposition. There is no debate, No negotiation and most certainly nothing for us to contribute or worry about. We do not bear any responsibility for what happens, good or bad. Further, if we are reciting Yahweh's word and affirming his plan, we never have to say,
"Know that I am not lying."
As Paul does in Galatians, and then again in the 31st verse of 2 Corinthians. But since he was doing neither, he was actually doing precisely what he denied. If we say anything in the name of God which is contrary to the Torah and prophets, we are lying, and it is obvious to those who care. And if we convey his word accurately, it makes no difference whether or not we are liars. No one is saved based upon our credibility, other than to determine whether or not he is a false prophet. Paul's veracity is irrelevant, and that makes his focus on himself and his unsupported protestations completely inappropriate. So you may be wondering why Satan would be this overt regarding his relationship with Paul, and why he would encourage Paul to disparage the adversary elsewhere in his letters. And yet the answer is obvious. By having Shaul dismiss the adversary, Satan makes it appear as if he isn't the adversary. This is precisely how Allah, who was modeled after Satan, positions the devil in the Quran. And thus while it's blatantly obvious that Allah is the adversary, this ruse is sufficient to fool most Muslims. Satan has to shed the adversary title to be worshipped as God, which is why that aspect of his nature is assailed in Paul's letters and Muhammad's Quran. But what bothers me the most about all of this is that Satan and his accomplices are so bold in their foolishness. It is obvious that they think people are essentially stupid, too ignorant and irrational to figure out who they are or what they are doing. It is as if Satan was thumbing his nose at God, saying, "Why do you care about these morons? They are complete idiots and will believe anything. Just watch, I'll tell them exactly who I am, and with whom I work, and they will still willingly drink the poison right out of my hand." So while the evidence in favor of Paul being a false prophet is overwhelming, my purpose in sharing Paul's Corinthians commentary was simply to encourage you to think about the distinct possibility that there is more to all of this than one man foolishly speaking for himself. And now that we are on the subject of Satan, and before we return to the book of Acts, since I have mentioned that Paul referenced signs and wonders to affirm his calling and to expose Satan's and Torahlessness, here is what the devil's advocate had to say about himself and the spirit who apparently facilitated and empowered him. Hearkening back to the confession found in Galatians 2 verse 8, we read,
"For the one of mystery who is the essence of religious doctrine is already currently and actually functioning of Torahlessness. Only the one alone currently restrains this, holding fast, actively trying to prevent this now until the one might appear, existing from out of the midst." 2 Thessalonians 2 verse 7.
End of part 5.